Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church, but I'ma keep tapping return. I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict, Russell
Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
Hello, everybody. I am Andrew Hall, not Russ, but I have a trading problem.
I am Rocky Petrella, and as always, I have a trading problem.
It's your boy Herms, your favorite non-regular person on this show who also has a trading problem.
Hey there, welcome to the show. We got Trade Addicts session 313 tonight. And as you probably already heard, and I mentioned before, Russ is not on us on the show this week. He's not with us, but he's with us in spirit. And Russ, you're always with us in our hearts. But we've got Rocky in his the B chair, as we call it, doing the co-hosting gig. How you doing today, Rocky?
Doing good. Happy to let you take the lead this one. I've been filling in a lot of the lead spots for Russ, and Russ and you, I think, are both a lot better at it than me. So I said this week we'll just, even though Russ isn't here. We were talking about it before the show. I'll take my normal Rocky spot, and you can take the Russ spot. But, Andrew, in the Russ spot, you forgot to say.
Oh, yes.
That we are a proud member.
Proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will. And I will, and I do. Thank you. Thank you, Rocky, for the reminder. I'm a lot of practice.
Yeah.
I'm a junkie and an addict, and sometimes I get confused. But no,
well,
and
believe
as you,
me, one of the times Russ was not on, I started without the I am Rocky Petrella, and I have traded problem because I got mixed up between the two.
It happens. I'm telling you, it happens. We're all just doing our best to get through these days. But as you already heard, everybody who's listening on your earballs and your podcasting phone device, we've got the one and only Herms with us tonight. How you doing tonight, Herms?
Hey, what up, what up, what up? I don't have my kazoo. I normally have my kazoo, but, you know, I feel like the mouth sounds are enough. It's close enough. But, yeah, no, I'm glad to be here. We got stuff to talk about and football news, which is fun.
And some of the news is with quote fingers, right, which we'll get into here in a minute. But I think just because I know that it's been a while since I've potted with you, Herms. I know that you've had some changes and some events going on in the fantasy space, just so that people, if they're not sure where they've heard of you or not sure where they can find you, why don't you tell people a little bit about who you are in this space before we get going on tonight's show?
Yeah. So I'm Herms. That's not my government name, but that's all you need to know. And I am a writer, podcaster. I do stuff with audio engineering sometimes. You have probably in the past seen my work at places like Fantasy Pros, Fantasy Six Pack, Draft Sharks, a bunch of other places. I'm kind of in that whole free agent mode right now, but we'll see. We'll see. You never know. You know, the next stop along the journey is going to be just as fun as the previous ones. But if you just want to check out my musings and weird things that I say on the interwebs, you can find me on the Twitter machine at HermsNFL.
Perfect. Yeah. And I know this is an off season that a lot of people, they feel like, are free agents. There's a lot of people in the NFL world as well as the fantasy space that are kind of between gigs and kind of looking for the next step. So I've been there myself a few times. It's part of the deal, right? It's the life we live. But I am glad that you're here, Herms. We're excited to chat it up with you tonight. And as the guests, of course, you get to decide. Do we talk? Well, let's talk about news. I guess we should talk about news. I know we kind of mentioned a little before. We should talk about news before we
just
have you
a little
decide,
bit of news.
Right? There's some things to talk about. I think the one that is on the shoot first and is the one that is the biggest, important, most important, obviously, is J.K. Dobbins to the Chargers. Do we care? I guess, Herms, I'll start with you. Do we care about J.K. Dobbins on the Chargers?
I would care if he didn't have, like, multiple ligament tears and then also a torn Achilles. You know, I mean, that's the thing. it's cool that Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman are looking forward to, you know, building Ravens West out there in out there in Inglewood, but it's just it doesn't matter, you know?
Like, yeah,
as much as I love J.K. Dobbins and want for him to be the player that we all wanted him to be, your body breaks down sometimes if you're an athlete, especially an athlete in a contact sport that, you know, gives out as much abuse as professional football does. And it's just that's how it is. You know, his body's probably shot. His legs are probably shot, especially that, I think it was his right leg where all this stuff happened. Yeah, I don't know. Like, cool. Congrats collecting a paycheck. But for now, it's basically just Gus Edwards, and maybe we'll have a better conversation about the Chargers backfield after the NFL draft. Because I have a feeling the person that we want is still, you know, kind of floating out there in college land. So we'll know more about that situation soon.
I completely agree. Yeah,
it matters to me, Herms, because I am a Dobbins truther, man. So I am happy to see him get land in a spot where this is probably the best spot he could have landed to. If he's ever going to succeed, it would be here. Like you said, they're creating Ravens West, Greg Roman offense, running the ball. So at least that's a good thing. I agree with you. It's a long shot. I'm still willing to throw a third on J.K. Dobbins or something like that. But it's hard to like project that he's going to be the J.K. Dobbins of old after the multiple injuries you just mentioned. But Frank, and Frank in the chat, by the way, as always, feels like he can have a pass catching role. But Frank, in addition to putting this on the sheet, did ask, you know, who, and I think Herm's kind of answered in his opinion, who leads the Chargers in touches, meaning carries and catches this year, J.K., Gus, or someone not yet on the team?
Yeah, and I was going to get into that. It's someone not on the team, right? Like, I just don't think it's either of these two guys. You know what's funny, though? I think I mentioned this on Junkies, but I actually really liked Gus until they signed J.K., and now I don't really like either one, right? Because now that pie is getting split another way. I thought Gus, this might have been his chance to earn the 1A to rookie 1B kind of a thing. And I just the question that I think that I don't think anybody's talking about is, what's the over-under for Greg Roman to call John Harbaugh Jim Harbaugh? Right. He used to work with his brother in Ravens land out there with you, Herms. I guarantee you he's going to make that mistake a few times, or just call him Harby and we just move on. Like, he's like, hey, Harbs, what's going on, Harbaugh? Like, how coach? You know, like,
maybe I think you just made the mistake, Andrew.
This is exactly
what you said, to call John Harbaugh Jim Harbaugh, but he's with Jim Harbaugh, not John Harbaugh.
I could have sworn John was in LA.
How many times can I say Harbaugh?
Is not enough. It'll be fun. But the point I'm getting at with all of this is we're seeing a very similar picture with Harbaugh, Roman, Dobbins, and Edwards. So it feels like something here has got to change. And maybe this is a new landscape, West Coast time. Maybe they get up a little later. They feel a little better. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting ride. And I'm very curious to see what happens there, because they don't have a lot of receiving options. Much like the Ravens didn't, right? The Ravens are kind of depleted in that position too. But the major difference, of course, is Herbert doesn't run like Lamar does. So, and that line is a little bit different too. So it's going to be an interesting season, to say the least. But yeah, I saw that question on there. I was definitely getting around to that. But I also think, I don't know if I care really right now. Herms put it best. Let's check back in a week. Let's see how the draft goes.
And then there's been some smoke around the Jim Harbaugh drafting his old running back Blake Corum, who I like a lot, and if the three of them are all there, that's just a big mess that I don't even know how to deal with. So,
well, and yeah, that's why yet again I'm just confused, right? How many times is Greg gonna call Jim John? Then is what my mind was going. But you get my point, and that's how confusing it is. And the over under is set at 12 a day. Anything else to talk about on that one, Herms? Do you think we covered it pretty well?
No, I think that's about it.
Yeah. Well, you're the Ravens fan, right?
Steelers fan. I live in Ravens Steelers country.
My brain is just off tonight, guys. I'm sorry. I'm too addicted. But yeah, so as an AFC North fan, like, we both have suffered the Ravens in a sense, as a Bengals fan myself. And I've seen a fair amount of JK and Gus, and just kind of feeling, you know, meh. Like, I'm just kind of meh. I'm just kind of with you. The next one on the sheet here that Frank put on, which is definitely something that I think is speculative and could be something, but it isn't news yet. But Schefter says he's expecting at least a multi-game suspension for Rashee Rice. Friend of the show, friend of myself, and friend of many in the industry, Drew Davenport, kind of said if Shefty's tweeting about it, it's probably got some validity to it. I think, well, I know myself, I did think this was coming. I thought this was going to happen. And I'm not entirely shocked that it's kind of becoming more real. I think that the way that the NFL is these days, perception is reality. And the perception here is not good. You know, like the perception here is not at all what the NFL wants to be in the news for. So I do think they're going to make a point out of this. But I mean, again, without putting too much pressure on you here, Herms, what kind of a future do you see for Rashi Rice, both this year and in Dynasty long term?
I mean, my general philosophy when it comes to situations like this, or when a player has a super serious injury that may threaten, you know, them missing a bunch of games or whatever, I try to just keep in perspective that Dynasty is the long game. And if we're only talking maybe 4 to 6 games or whatever it is, I don't know, you can get through that. It's fine. I mean, I think the only thing I would be really concerned about if it got to this point, with, you know, the emphasis on if, is if there were some sort of like legal ramifications that would put him in prison a la a Henry Ruggs. In that situation, yeah, I'd probably be a little bit more worried about what's happening. But from as this situation continues to unfold, I don't think anything's happening to the point that would motivate me to move Rashi Rice off of my team if I already roster him. If I don't already have Rashi Rice and somebody else is freaking out, then like, yeah, it'd be a decent time to try and buy. But I don't go too hard with news stories unless it legitimately threatens the player's entire career.
Yeah. Does this do that? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I mean, yeah, nobody died. He's not going to prison. Like, I hate to say it like all flippant like that, but I mean, like, this isn't that bad. I'm with you. Like, this isn't like career altering of a change. I know that I sent some offers for Rashi Rice when the thing first happened and news was kind of coming out and everybody was like, you know, who knows what to do. And most of the responses I got were, nah, I'm going to hold on and see what happens, right? And I don't know if this really changes anything. I don't know if this is actionable information because it's just the same speculation we've already heard. Now, if you get somebody, you know, posting in your group chat, getting all squirrely about Rashi Rice, or, you know, puts them on a trade block and saying, hey, best offer by Wednesday, right? Like, that's what we had in Junkies. You know, like somebody comes in and says that, then fair enough. Let's go for it. But yeah, I'm not really moving the needle much here. Rocky, did you have anything else to add to the Rice drama that we're talking about here?
No, we've talked about it on the show before too. Yeah. This, like Frank said, this is a little more concrete just because it's Schefter saying this, and it wasn't really out there before he's making it seem like a suspension is likely, which was not what was out there before. So the only thing to me is if you like Rice, and you can get them, you know, cheaper because of this, or maybe somebody was holding and now they're worried because he's going to miss 6 games or whatever, then go for it. But I'm not selling him off of this. No.
Yeah, exactly. If you were holding before, you're holding now. I think the whole point of this, and to Herm's point too, it's Dynasty. Like, don't freak out over 3 or 4 games. I don't think it's 6 games. I don't think it's 8 games. I don't think it's 2 seasons. Like, let's be honest here, guys. This is, oddly enough, not as bad as gambling. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to say it, but that's kind of backwards. But that's how we are in a league sponsored by DraftKings. Anyway, all that aside, the last piece of news that Frank put on the sheet that I definitely think is worth mentioning, and I'm just going to read this verbatim because I think Frank says it perfectly. Zach Wilson to the Broncos. Meh, more funny than important. Completely agree, Frank. That's exactly what this is. This is one of those moves that can start to move the needle and can be actionable, but it shouldn't be. You know, like I saw somebody put Zach Wilson on the trade block in a couple leagues. I was just like, man, like
may be the starter there, but
well, I know, and I get the logic. And I sent him in a package. I was trying to work on a deal, and I sent him in a package where I was trying to get CJ Stroud without giving up a quarterback. And it was expensive. I probably overpaid, but my thought was, hey, if Zach Wilson moves the needle as a maybe he starts there kind of guy in a package, I don't mind losing him. You know what I mean? Like, probably not going to start him. And that team needs some help. So I'm like, well, I'm looking to rebuild anyway. Like, let's kind of pivot. Zach Wilson is not part of a rebuild for me. So, I mean, maybe in the sense of if he's on waivers, go get him, right? If he's free, just to see if he's the starter. Let's see if he dodges all the draft bullets that we don't think he'll dodge. But if he does, now you've got some valuable asset to trade. But Herms, do you agree this is more funny than important? And what are you doing with Zach Wilson?
Oh, it's very funny. Definitely any time that a team takes on a terrible quarterback on purpose, it's highly amusing. You know, not quite as bad as the Eagles sending that pick for Kenny Pickett to sit on the bench. But, you know, but I don't know. Like, Zach Wilson is the type of dude, like, he – what's not funny about this is that any pass catcher, other player in the offense – that we had any sort of hope in is just dead. Like, whatever you were hoping for out of Cortland Sutton, like, also Marvin Mims is another one where, like, that's kind of sad. Like, Jerry Jeudy moves on. There's a chance for him to elevate on the depth chart. Like, okay, this is kind of cool. After last year where, you know, his route participation was a little spotty, mostly, you know, miss than hit. And it's like, okay, cool. Maybe they'll get a quarterback. But then it's Zach Wilson, and you're like, ah. He left holding the bag, doing whatever. But, yeah, like, it's funny from an observational standpoint, but from actually putting this information in practice, it's very depressing.
Yeah, I just think it's hilarious because, I mean, I've been the anti-Zach Wilson guy since the second he was drafted.
No.
And to see what he was traded, eventually traded for an exchange of seventh-round draft picks or something that.
He was the sweetener to a seventh-round swap.
Eesh. It's just a beautiful thing to see. So that's all I got to say on it. It's the one thing I've gotten right.
I want to put it this way, maybe a different way, a different take on this, a different way to look at it. I'm just really glad that this happened before the draft so we could all talk about it and laugh about it for a number of days instead of it happening during the draft and getting lost in the shuffle of all of the moves, you know? Like, at least we get to stare at this one and go, oh, man, that's a good one. Like, I like that trade. That's funny. But I'm with you. This does not.
Who's there now? I think it'll be even more hilarious. Stidham. If he gets beat out. Yeah, if he gets beat out by Stidham.
Yeah. Well, not Matt Ryan. He retired. Not news, but still interesting. You know, kind of not funny, more sad, I guess. But still, like, there's no doubt that they take a quarterback in the draft, right? Like, that's just the plan. That's been the plan.
I would think so.
Somebody I saw on Twitter posted something about Zach Wilson to the Broncos means we're tanking for 25. And I'm like, man, that is not a terrible idea. Like, you're definitely not going to do well if he's your starter for the year. So maybe that's the plan. They just hold their pick and go for the 101 and 25. Who knows? But yeah, here's Frank in the chat. Stidham versus Zach versus Knicks, the QB competition we all wanted. I don't know about that, but that would be entertaining to watch all season. You never know who you're going to get. But with that, I think that puts us through to the next section, which is up to you, Herms, as the guest. You get to decide. Do you want to talk first about the trades or the questions? What are you feeling?
I like to be a pretty conversational guy. I think questions are always a fun way to start out.
Questions it is, then. Let's do it. We've got four this week submitted on the Twitter machine, as Herms called it, Twitter box, the X machine. Justin Flory here has got the first one at Buford9442. What is your philosophy on sending counter offers when you are sent an offer from another league mate? Do you always counter or only when the initial offer is what you would consider reasonable? Herms, I'll kick it to you first. As a conversationalist, what are your thoughts on countering in Dynasty?
I think it comes down to how good the first offer was. Like, that's always been my thing about it. There are some times I'll receive things straight up and I'm just like, no, we're not going to talk about this. Because there have been, you know, and we all relate to this. We all play in plenty of leagues. Everybody has that one guy or gal in their league that just shoots off the most egregious trade offers possible. Yeah. And at a certain point, you're just, you know, I'm always willing to try a little bit. Like, if it's a new league and it's somebody I haven't really played with before, like, I'll talk to you back and forth a little bit for sure. But if we've been through this dog and pony show and this little song and dance multiple times and the quality of your offers are never improving, then it's like, yeah, at a certain point, that relationship's going to sour, and I'm just going to stop. It's maybe not the best way to go about things, but also I tend to be annoyed very easily and like doing things spitefully. So if you want me to be that person, then, like, yeah, send me terrible offers. But if it's a good one, though, like, if it's at least within the ballpark of what's happening, I think I like to go about it just being like, okay, cool, what are you looking for? Like, that's kind of it. Really sit down and have those conversations, because at a certain point you kind of realize, like, I'm here, you're here, and the agreements is like we're not far apart. You know, it's like it's like those two like magnets on opposite sides, kind of like repelling each other a little bit, but like they're really close to, you know, making them stick. But yeah, I just, if something's close, ask questions. Don't just shoot something back without asking them something. Like really try and sit down and discuss it.
John Bosch would hate that answer.
Oh yeah,
but John hates you know to talk trade.
You know what? There are a lot of people. I don't think Russ is wrong in any regard. I'm more like Russ than I am the community at large. But there are a lot of people that do not counter, and they think about it like it's not worth my time. If it's not close, I'm not going to bother. Right? And I mean, I get it. And I mean, Roman here in the chat only counter if offer was even worth it. I get it. I get why that's what you're doing. I get it. But also, I counter pretty much all the time, like to even go the other direction further. Like I try to counter everything because at least they're telling me who they want to give up. Right. And so at that point, if it's somebody like a ridiculous offer that makes no sense on the face of it, and I'm just not at all excited, well, then I'll put back what I think those players he sent me are worth and try to give him a little bit of insight into where I'm at. But like, if you send me Jacoby Brissett for my Bryce Young, right? I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. Like, I'm not going to give you Bryce Young for Jacoby Brissett, but here's Brian Robinson in a third. You know what I mean? Like, here's the conversation. You told me you didn't want Jacoby Brissett. That's what that trade told me. It also told me you wanted Bryce Young, but our values are way off on that. Maybe I can find something else that makes me happier with the side that I'm looking at. And I think, and you hit on another really good point there too, Harms. It depends on who it's coming from, because there are definitely some leagues where I get an offer and I don't even decline it. I just let it expire, you know, where I'm just like, yep, that's just going to sit there because I don't think that's a great offer. And then when it happens to me, I'm like, point taken. You know what I mean? Like, it's been there for 3 days and nobody's, it's all revoked. Be like, okay, let me try and send another one. But I do think there is, it's more of an art than a science, I guess, is the easiest way to land this plane, is that I think that countering and communicating in general with your league mates and making sure that you've got an open line of communication, because the last thing you want to do is piss somebody off who has a guy that you want, or like, you know, piss somebody off and shut that door. Now you've only got 10 teams to trade with. And then maybe now you've only got 9. Like, there's no reason to burn those bridges. The other thing is, as big as this community is, it's still pretty small. You might run into them in another league. So like, my logic is always try our best to be nice, be polite, be kind. Like, let's try to be open-minded about this. And then the thing I'll say at the end of all of this, if the counter is terrible and you reply back with what you think is fair, and then they kind of reply and get all up in their feels about it and say, man, that was awful. I'm like, hey, I just think our values are different. Like, I'm not trying to crap on you. I'm not saying I'm right. I just usually end it with, I think our values are different. But I love countering. I think countering is a fun thing to do. If it's the right person in the right league and it makes sense, go for it. But if you don't want to, don't feel obligated. That's pretty much the best way to put it. Rocky, what are your thoughts?
I'm with you too. I generally try and counter. I definitely have my share of ones where I just reject. And I do think, and I think Herm said this too, is it does depend on how close the offer is. If it's just bad, I'll just reject. And I usually even try and leave a comment, just at least something like, this is not even close to me or something like that. And if they want to throw something else, that's fine by me. I'm not going to say I counter every single offer, but if it's reasonably close, which most of Russ's aren't, I will counter. So. Yeah.
Roman says, don't be Russ. Yeah. Love you, Russ. It's
so as long sometimes. As you're not just pressing buttons, I usually try and send a counter if I can find. Sometimes I just don't find anything I like, but most of the time, if it's close-ish, I will send a counter. And you guys kind of covered mostly everything else to go along with that. So,
yeah, and I think, too, countering, again, it I don't want to make it seem like you have to counter, right? That's kind of what I said, too. Like, only counter if you feel obligated. But if you're listening to this show, you're a trade addict, go ahead and counter, man. Like, you know, if you're listening to this, you like trading, that's how you trade. Sometimes you got to counter. So yes. Appreciate the question, though, Justin. But I think generally, I think we covered that pretty well. Next up, we've got Tommy Blair, FF Tommy B from the Junkies and Superflex Super Show. Walk me through your process of sending a trade offer. What are you looking for and how does that manifest? How often are your offers rejected and how often are offers you receive accepted? Talk about a tongue twister. Herms, I'll go to you first again on this one. What is your general process for trading? And maybe even another way to angle this is, how has that changed over the years?
I mean, I don't know, man. It really depends, because I think there are certain leagues that use the trade block effectively, and then there are certain leagues where people just, you know, host players, you know, at random, yeah. and it just becomes this huge mess of whatever, and people leave them on the trade block forever and never take anybody off. So, like, I think that's a pretty interesting way to kind of like start that. Like, how your league tends to go about it will influence your approach to it, or at least that's how I look at it. But in a vacuum, if we're just talking about, you know, your average everyday league or whatever, my whole thing is just identify a problem, find the solution on someone else's roster, hope I have enough resources to go get that thing, and then send the offer. Like, I look at it just very simply. And the thing about that, though, is that I don't mind making smaller deals that can parlay into something else. What does kind of frustrate me is whenever I receive like mammoth offers that involve like this dude's going to send me 6 assets. I'm going to send them 5. I'm like, no, dude, we got to pare this down a little bit. We got to
digestible. Little... Yeah.
Exactly. Cause like my brain is not going to process all of that information in one gulp, you know, like I think that's probably my big thing is that when I do go out and make offers, I try to make them as palatable and digestible to the person receiving them as possible, just because I know how I feel on the receiving end when somebody just throws everything they got at me.
Yeah. And I think that's a fun way to put it too, is like smaller trades first. What are your thoughts, Rocky?
Herms is, just keeps saying a lot of what I want to say. I
spitting fire tonight, Herms.
Yeah, I always try and make my offers close. I don't like a ton of negotiating, even if I will send counter offers. I try and make it close to what I'll do. I leave a little wiggle room, but in season, I will usually try and look at what. I often try and look at what someone else will need and see if I have it, and then see what I want on their roster. That's kind of what I do. And in the non-point scoring season, it's a little more about value, because we always talk about that. I mean, in season, it should be some about value, but value often means different things to different people in season. So in the non-point scoring season, it's basically pure value. I will occasionally, and I've talked about this, like quarterback, I do a little differently. If I have a quarterback need, I will go hunt for a quarterback. I'm not just ignoring positions entirely in the non-point scoring season. But most other positions, I'm usually trying to just, you know, get a guy I think will rise in value. I will occasionally try and get cheap points early in the non-point scoring season, especially because right after the season, nobody wants the old guys. So, like, I made a trade for Keenan Allen, I think, in, like, January or something, because, you know, I knew his value immediately sunk as soon as the season ended. So that's one other way I like to do trades. But it's generally – I don't generally hunt specific guys. I look for needs in season, and then I tend to slack off a little during the early part of the non-point scoring season. But as things get closer, I start looking for guys, yeah, that'll rise in value and things like that. But I rarely just like, I have to get, you know, player X on my team and search who has them on the roster.
Yeah, no, and I'm kind of the same. I usually look at my team first and kind of go from my own spot and say, all right, what position do I need? And then I look at the assets I'm willing to trade away and I say, all right, well, of these guys that I can send, of these receivers or running backs usually that I can send for a tight end, which one would get what, right? And kind of start to put that together in my head. And then I'll go look at those kinds of tight ends and see if anybody's got a surplus and say, hey, this guy's got 2 of them. Maybe he'd be willing to pivot into a receiver. I also like zigging when other people zag. So like right now being rookie draft season, I'm looking to acquire vets for late round picks. I think a lot of times you can get, you know, actual points for third rounders that we've all seen third rounders become somebody, but more often than not, they don't. They're not every third round pick is a Tank Dell, Puka Nacua kind of pick. A lot of them are names you've never even heard of, like Kenny McIntosh. Remember him in the 4th round last year? Like there's so many players that I've drafted that were just like never even saw my lineup, dropped after a month. I'd much rather take Jacoby Brissett to reference that name again, like somebody like that. There's actually, it was an offer in a league of mine that was two like mid to early thirds, as if that matters, for Austin Eckler. And I was like, I feel like those two thirds are most likely going to be about the same worth as Austin Eckler. And I was like, I'd rather take the two chances than the one. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where it comes down to for me, is like just kind of looking at roster construction a little bit. Obviously, we talk a lot about trades in the show and everything's in a vacuum, right? You're trying, no roster construction is really brought up, but all that does matter, right? Context and nuance are king, and it takes a little bit more effort. But that's part of what I like about trading, is the conversation and the you know, finding a compromise, finding something in the middle that can be like a nice solid piece for both of us. So I also, I don't mind targeting specific players, but usually they're not the big guys, to kind of, to Herm's point. I don't like sending a big monster trade that's like, you know, a ton of players for a ton of players. I'd almost rather send like three little trades and then have the other guy kind of accept or decline. And there was one that I just got done, that big one I was talking about for Stroud, where the guy was like, mash them all together. And we kind of had a bigger discussion, but that was much more frustrating for me. It's like, even just on the counter side, I'm like, man, now I'm having to worry about all this. Like, that's a lot of stuff at once. So, you know, to each their own. But generally, I start with my roster and then kind of go out from there. To get to the other questions, I think, too, these are worth asking in general, just on vibes alone. Herm, what percentage of your offers are rejected?
Well, I'm glad you're asking the vibe king himself. I'd say it's probably about 50-50, because frankly, I don't send like too many trades. Like, I try to kind of sit back, kind of sit and hide in the grass.
Let the trades come to you.
But also just like picking my spots to pounce, you know, like really knowing when it's time to leap out of the grass and be like, I'm here. You know, like I think like that's another thing that I would kind of tack on to my, you know, the earlier answer that I gave. Like, I think more of my trades get accepted simply because I don't trade very often.
So they're like, it's now or never with Herms. Oh my goodness, he sent me an offer. We got to go. Rocky, what about you? What percentage of your trades do you think are rejected?
Probably more than are accepted. I've never really thought about it that way. I'd say it's probably two rejections for every one except. I don't think I lowball, but I do tend to go a little, as most people do, a little lower when I start. And I'm like Herms too, though. I don't send a ton. I tend to, like you said, Andrew, kind of have them come to me. I'm in so many leagues. I'm going to get trade offers every week, and then I can counter them and all that kind of stuff.
When you're in 10 trade addicts leagues or whatever, this
one, 11. Yeah, 11.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I didn't know if you were
one or not yet. So, yeah, I usually tend to more let them come to me. In season, I'm maybe a little more active trying to get points and things like that. But during the off season, I tend to just wait for the offers and then counter them, like we talked about earlier. So, I think it probably more rejects than accepts, but I don't think my trades are that bad. They're not as bad as Russ's.
No, and I think I'm between the two of you. I think mine are probably either 2 or 3 to 1 rejections. And I'm counting each rejection in a counter too, though. Like, I think there are some times where, you know, a trade might have to go back and forth 4 times before we agree. I count each of those as a rejection in a sense, right? Where I'm rejecting and they're rejecting. So that's, you know, 2 or 3 for that one trade. If you're going about like, which trades do I send that never get countered and never, you know, materialize, it's probably a 2 to 1. But if you're going for, you know, each individual trade talk and how there might be, hell, there are times I've gone like 6 or 7 trades back and forth each to get to the right spot, because I'm just like bored and not doing anything. I'm like, yeah, let's try this model. Let's try this variation. Let's try, you know, like, and then eventually I'm like, I give up, you win. And I just accept the trade. So yeah, like there are definitely some where it's higher or lower, but I know too, I'm with you, Rocky. I do tend to send a little bit on the lower side. I kind of like the haggle. I like the whole bartering system of trades. I like the whole valuation differentiation. Like, I kind of love playing that game. And I know that's counter to John Bosch and others that just say, send your best and move on. I don't have time. I'm like, I definitely have time, and I'm going to waste it because that's what I'm here to do. But yeah, I think those are all great questions. And Tommy, of course, one of the better dynasty assets and minds in the space coming up right now. Glad to have you on Junkies. We'll move on to the next question here. We got Craig Booker at Craig Booker One. What process and or resources do you use to gauge the fantasy impact of free agency and draft additions to the offensive line? Now, my first thought when I saw this was, we, and Scott specifically on Junkies, we talk about offensive line and offensive coordinator and coaching changes a lot, because I do think a lot of that matters with gameplay and all of that stuff kind of comes into together to form a nice, delicious stew of how this person's going to play, right? All of those are ingredients. But I guess if you're specifically talking about free agency and draft additions to the offensive line, Herms, does the offensive line, like how granular do you get? Does that offensive line change whenever somebody gets added? Does it change your valuation, or is it kind of more wait and see how things progress through training camp first?
I mean, as someone who roots for a team that hasn't had a good offensive line for several years, I can tell you very matter-of-factly. No, I mean, it's important, but I think we tend to overestimate our ability to diagnose which ones will be, I don't know, I think we have a pretty good eye for which ones are bad. Yeah, I think we have a really good idea for which ones are obscenely good, but everything in the middle kind of just depends, because anytime there is an addition or a subtraction, it's a different group of five people that have to work together as one singular appendage of the offense. So that's where things get a little bit tricky, where we can be super excited. Like, for example, throwing the Steelers back out there, if at pick 20 on Thursday, tomorrow by the time that people are listening to this, they end up with Amarius Mims from Georgia. It'll be cool because he'll anchor the right side of the line, allow Broderick Jones to stay at left tackle, but there's still some concerns with the interior. The team still doesn't have a center. There's still all sorts of stuff like that. And even if they do find the guy, that's going to be two new starters on the offensive line that have never played with the other three guys before. Right. So, like, I'll be happy, but I won't know until, like you said, once we get into training camp, once we see some certain stuff, once we see them in the preseason, even if it is like the first game, they only maybe play a couple drives or whatever. But like that amount of information we get in the preseason, people treat it like it's pointless, but it's some of the first looks that we get at some of these guys working together. And like, I don't know. I think that's really how I tend to go about it. It's just, I don't want to assume anything. I can guess who's really good. I can guess who's really bad. I can't really tell you what's going to happen in the middle.
I like that. Oh, and I like the way you put that too, where there are so many different variables when it comes to offensive line, you know, communication between time played, position played. Sometimes people are switching from guard to tackle or left to right. Like there's all these different things. Some offenses are run heavy and have a lot of scheme play and different, you know, considerations for who's guarding who. You've also got a lot of defensive battles that can happen that kind of change the way the offensive looks game to game. So I think there's just too many variables for me to really care too much. I will say that when somebody leaves, it's more signal to me when somebody leaves than when somebody joins, right? So like if player A leaves an offensive line, I take that like, oh, that's a serious loss. But if they join another offensive line, that isn't equivalent gain. It's more like it could be, but it's more than likely less, because that upside, we don't know what the downside is. It's probably less likely to be as good. And it's a little convoluted, but that's kind of how my brain works. But Rocky, what are your thoughts on the offensive lines and switching and free agency and drafting and all that stuff? Does it even matter to you?
Not too much. I mean, I think it's kind of like what Herm said. The extremes we have a good idea of. Other than that, I mean, I listen to podcasts and I read some stuff, you know, Fantasy Pros and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, you got the share.
Represent.
I mean, I'll listen to much smarter people than me. I don't profess to be an expert on offensive line evaluation. So I don't worry too much about it unless I know for a fact that they're bad, really bad or really good either. And all that vast space in the middle, a lot of times great players can overcome that. And if they can, it's usually because they are very, very bad. But in Dynasty, even there's not much. It's not like you can be assured that an offensive line is bad for the next 5 years. So if we're talking Dynasty as opposed to redraft, it's hard to factor in current offensive line too much anyway. And I'm not smart enough to know how improvable an offensive line is for sure. So I don't tend to put a lot of factor into it, like when I'm trading or anything like that or drafting. But any kind of information I'm getting is, like I said, I don't think I'm smart enough to evaluate offensive line play. So I'll just listen to some of the podcast experts that do know what they're talking about.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is that you're an Eagles fan and you don't have to worry about it anyway, because they just seem to backfill
for like 20 years. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. It's always fun.
Yes, exactly. I haven't had a bad offensive line since I don't even remember.
Yeah, as a Bengals fan, I'm always reminded of Joe Burrow getting his knee bent backwards and, you know, the line being to blame for the last 4 years. And it's, you know, kind of similar to where the Steelers are now, so I get it. But I feel like the Bengals haven't had a good offensive line in a while, so I don't even know what that feels like. But I think what the funniest thing about that, Rocky, is you're so smart for not being smart, right? That's really the answer. Is like, just follow smart people. Don't try to be everything. Like, kind of get some interest in what's going on and what you can control and what you are good at and all that. But man, I'm telling you what, there are a lot of people that are better than me out there, and I'll just listen to them. But also, again, to kind of wrap up, I think we see a lot about offensive lines and game planning and schemes and protection assignments and things like that in the preseason. And that's really when you can start to, I don't know, materially change rankings or do whatever you got. And speaking of rankings, our last question of the night comes from Roman Runyon at Run13, who is in the chat tonight. Thanks, Roman. At RRUN13. What are the rookie ranks at the moment? I don't know if we can really answer what the rookie ranks are. That's not really like what this show's about. However, there are a lot of places you can find them, and I think they're all correct. Everybody's perfect. Nobody's wrong. But the next part of this question is really where I wanted to get into the meat of it. Does your rookie QB rank change due to landing spots? I'll say short answer for me, yes. Long answer is it obviously depends, right? There are some places where it does and some places where it doesn't. But generally speaking, where a QB lands matters a lot more to me than anything else. Draft capital is obviously huge, but we've seen players like Zach Wilson, like Josh Rosen, get a ton of great draft capital, but be in a really messy offense or messy scheme for what they are. So for me, I feel like where they land actually matters almost the most. And what other equipment do they have to work with? What other assets do they have to throw to? Rocky, I'll go to you first on this one. What are your thoughts on rookie QBs? And do you change your rankings after the draft very much, if at all?
I try not to change a lot based on landing spot, but it does matter, I think, for quarterbacks especially. And maybe not even more so their current situation. But a lot of times just the organization they go to. There's just some organizations that are eternally crap and or bad at developing quarterbacks, because I am severely worried about Caleb Williams going to the Bears, for instance. I believe they haven't developed a legit star quarterback in their entire history, if I can remember correctly. So,
well, you don't count Jay Cutler being developed there. Sure, I liked him.
Well, I'm not saying they never developed a starter. I'm saying
no. I know.
Like, I'm just a high end guy. Jay Cutler is not a high end guy in my opinion. So, or the Jets. So, I mean, Zach Wilson was already bad, but the absolute worst possible place he probably could have gone was the Jets, because they don't really develop quarterbacks either. So, that's kind of how I look at it. More so, organization, like the Eagles have been good with quarterbacks, and you know, they got the, you know, Carson Wentz obviously turned out to be crap, and they got a Super Bowl season basically out of him. So there's certain organizations that do well and certain organizations that do not, and it's not necessarily their current personnel, but more just sort of the way the organizations run, especially how they develop quarterbacks, is kind of what I look at.
I like that. Herms, your thoughts on this? Do you change your draft rankings at all after you find out where people go?
I mean, yeah, I think more so from the point that Rocky made about a situation, to me, at least when it comes to quarterback, is less about what's currently on the roster and more about their track record of being able to put something together to help facilitate success down the road. Because I think about this as someone who lives in the greater DC metro area that has watched from the time that I was a kid, like, I'm telling you, they got it right this time with Patrick Ramsey. Then you fast forward a few years. It's okay. They got it right this time with Jason Campbell. Fast forward even, you know, it's
Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah, 100%. Dude. So it's like, I look at, like, even so, tying it to present day, this is like the second time in my lifetime that they've picked this high and really needed to get a quarterback, the Commanders. And I'm excited for whoever it is because, you know, thankfully Dan Snyder is not around. Perhaps this new ownership group can be, you know, the nice, you know, agent of change that this franchise has so desperately needed ever since Dan Snyder bought the team back in the day. But I don't yet know that. So that does kind of concern me a little bit. Whereas I think about a team like Minnesota that's poised to move up and take somebody, fingers crossed, please JJ McCarthy. That would be an amazing fit, but we don't have a lot of time to go super deep into that. But think about what they already have in place. Think about especially even the coaching staff that they have in place. I mean, like Kevin O'Connell certainly has a lot of experience, you know, with his background doing offensive coordinating stuff with the Rams and also being a quarterback in the NFL himself at one point. That's definitely a big help and stuff like that. So yeah, I think the environment and the sort of kind of ethos of like the culture matters to me a little bit more, because when we look at present landing spots, like what's it going to be for them right now? We do tend to not be super great at it sometimes. Let's use CJ Stroud last year as the perfect example. People being like, the Texans, oh, what do we do? Ah, terrible. God, and then he fell into like the middle of first round sometimes. And it's like, okay, like I get it, but it's not like this current iteration of the Texans front office has ever, you know, royally screwed up too bad with a quarterback outside. Well, that was off field stuff, so I'm not going to, whatever. Anyway, yeah. but yeah, like, you know, that's, I never want to go too far overboard with it, but it is very important.
Yeah. And I think the question that Roman asked here is even more specific when he puts it in the chat. Does JJ move ahead of Daniels or May if he goes before either? And I think, again, part of it is draft capital, but where are they going, right? That's kind of where it comes down. Because, again, I think there's going to be some trades here, right? And that's kind of where this gets murky. If everything stays the same and Washington stays at two and they select JJ, then I might, right? Like I might, if they find that he's better and they're willing to take him ahead of the Heisman Trophy winner and Drake May, right? Like that's kind of where I'm like, man, that's a lot of signal. That's hard to ignore. But if somebody trades up to two and is, you know, trying to make a little bit of waves and they want to make sure they get their guy, that context makes a little difference. The other thing, just in general, I mean, we've seen some quarterbacks. Was it the 21 class that had Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett and like, you know, Desmond Ridder? Like it was a terrible quarterback class. Right?
We don't talk about that.
I know. I don't want to make you're drinking bourbon. So you're going to be all right there, Hearns. But I'm saying more like, you know, that was one of those classes that there were, I would even say four quarterbacks kind of being discussed. I think Kyle Trask was in that class. And then like none of them landed in the right places and in the right draft capital. And it was just chaos all around, right? This year, we're kind of spoiled a little bit to have four quarterbacks that could go the top four picks overall. And that kind of draft capital kind of makes them equivalent in a sense, right? Like they're very close to each other. If that happens and there are teams trading all around, I want to look at the context of the landing spots to make the difference and break that tie. But generally speaking, I don't move rookies very much at the top anyway. I might move people at the bottom, right? Like your receiver 16 gets drafted as the eighth receiver off the board. Well, now I'd be stupid not to move him up. You know what I mean? Like the team saw something I didn't. I am not a pro at that. I listen to smart people and kind of try to congeal rankings together, but I don't do rankings. I don't performance evaluate. I don't watch film like detailed and do scouting and all like, that's just not my bag. I've got too many other things going on. So I do think it matters, but I don't think it's the only thing that matters. I guess that makes sense.
Like you said, when there's so many that are going high, I don't really think who goes second matters. Like, this isn't the best example because most of this class ended up not being as good as we hoped. But Zach, going back to Zach Wilson, he was the number two pick in the draft, too.
Yes, sir.
And Justin Fields is not in as good a spot as I was hoping he'd be 3 or 4 years into his career. But I was still taking Justin Fields all day over Zach Wilson, regardless of the fact that he went at the number two pick of the draft. And he was like 10 picks below Zach Wilson. These guys are going to be like within like 5 picks of each other at most, like all of them. Like it's going to be like no one's getting past like 6 or 7 at the latest, I think.
Well, and if they do, then you drop them, right? That's kind of mean. Like if you've got JJ or let's even just hell, I don't know. Like I've been watching Draft Day today, so I kind of am stuck on this. But like if Bo Callahan falls to number 6, right? Like that's something. Like you got to take that serious. If Drake May falls to number 12, right? And you had him as your third quarterback. You might move him down, you know?
I don't worry about that much, even if you're still talking top 12, like top.
Well, I'm just saying, like, there is a
20 something, then I start worrying about it.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm just saying that some of that does matter. And I hopefully, Roman, we answered your question. Hopefully, we're not rambling too much in there, but I think that was pretty good. But that's the last question. So then we move into, I think my favorite segment is the trades. And this is something I always love talking about because this is where the discussion can get squirrely real quick. Trade Addicts Leagues are 12-team Superflex tight end premium with points for return in Trade Addicts 1, but nowhere else. Is that right, Rocky?
Correct. Wait.
And I always get it screwed up because
I think you reversed it.
Yeah, I'm reversed because I'm in Trade Addicts 1 and we don't get points
for return. 0.05 per return yard in every league except TA1.
Yeah, I again, too many leagues. I get confused and my brain is sort of fried today, apparently, which is just terrific. But why not? So the first league we got here is Trade Addicts 5. And please, Rocky or Herms, tell me if any of these are you before we discuss it, because I want to make sure you go last.
There's one that's Herms.
This one's Herms? Actually,
no, I said there is one that is Herms, and it is the last trade on the
show. Right, but are any of these yours then, Rocky?
I didn't know. None of them are me.
Okay, perfect. Okay, just to make sure. So, because that changes the context, I want to make sure the listeners know. So, Trade Addicts 5, we're going to start with this one. No trades in the first four. I did send a couple, but didn't get anything close. But Trade Addicts 5, we've got the 107 and the 209 for Devin Achan. Now, again, stud running back. In exchange for the 107 and the 209. Herms, I want to go to you first. Do you want the picks or the player at this time of year, right before the draft?
I would rather have the player. I mean, Devon Achan is just obscenely good and just like out there playing with 99 Madden speed.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you can't just expect to find that anywhere. And I'm also a little bit kind of weird when it comes to approaching Dynasty, because I do understand there's a difference between the point scoring and the non-point scoring season, but I always approach everything with the understanding that the calendar moves pretty quickly, you know, especially at the pace that we like to follow the news cycle. And, you know, before you know it, hey, I got to start scoring points again. And I look at kind of where this rookie ADP is now. Granted, we don't have landing spot information. The NFL draft has yet to happen. But outside of like the top five or six picks, there is a bit of a teardrop for me just in terms of the strength of the prospects anyway. So if you're not landing just in some form or fashion, I'm not going to say like what the particular order is, but one of the quarterbacks, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers or Brock Bowers, that's sort of about that many picks. So like 107's like, not bad. You're going to get a solid player, but maybe not somebody as game-breaking ability as Achan. And then the second rounder on top of that, I don't know. I mean, it's the second round. Dude, I swear, I have no clue what to make of the second round of rookie drafts anyway, because it's just like, it's this year specifically because of like how many receivers there are. The lack of there just not being a consensus on where the running backs should be ranked at all. Like, so much information is going to be thrown at us after the draft that, like, I don't even know if I care about second round picks or not this year. So, sure, give me Devon Achan.
Well, I think you're on the right track there. And the second round is going to be a crapshoot. And that's really where landing spot matters and draft capital and all that. Rocky, what side are you on? The 107 and the 209 or Devon Achan? Which one would you rather have?
This one was tough for me because I love Achan, but that 107 is kind of where everybody sees the tier break at right now. So,
yep.
And you're probably getting what a Dunze or McCarthy or maybe Bowers, but I think in a 1.75, unless he
hit, I would doubt that Bowers falls, but you never know.
He's probably not getting there. I think Herms convinced me, though. I think I go Achan. And a part of it is because I was already an Achan. I love Achan. It's funny. The guys I love the most always seem to be the ones I didn't love coming out. And then they impress me, and it just turns me around completely.
Hey, like, I was not a big Achan guy. Great. You listen to feedback and change your mind. That's awesome.
In last year's draft, I did not love him coming out. But then, yeah, I saw what he showed us in the field. And the fact that he doesn't need a lot of touches to put up big points for you, I love that. And that 107, again, to me, the two most likely players, and this could also obviously switch with landing spots and draft capital and stuff like that. But as of right now, the two most likely players, I think, are McCarthy and Adunze. And I'm not an expert quarterback evaluator, but from everything I hear, I don't love McCarthy. He's not someone I think I'm really looking to draft. And Adunze, he could be a stud, but I think wide receivers can be such a crapshoot. We have so many wide receiver, but we've had 101 wide receiver, but you know, Laquon Treadwell, Corey Davis, like, I'm choosing to believe that Harrison and Neighbors are what everyone says they are. After that, I don't feel as confident in anybody else. Obviously Adunze is the leader of that pack, but he could easily bust too. So I'll take Achane. I'll take my running back points for the next few years. And like Herm said, 209, once you get past the middle of the second round, seconds don't mean much to me anyway. I actually do think this second round could be interesting just because all the running backs are going to go in the second round. And who knows, you know, who may pop up from there. Maybe somebody ends up being a stud. So I kind of like having the second round picks, but once you get past the, like, 207, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. They're practically a third to me. So, So I would lean Achane, though.
Yeah, and I think I'm on the Achane side here, too. I think all too often when we get to the rookie draft, and obviously for the months leading up to it during the non-point scoring season, everybody's looking at that pick like it's going to be the next Devon Achane, or it's going to be the next A.J. Brown, when in reality, it could be N'Keal Harry. It could be Treylon Burks. It could be Quentin Johnston. Like, as much as we think we're correct, I would rather take the bird in the hand versus two in the bush. And I will gladly give up those two picks for a stud at this point, that maybe the pick that you gave up is a stud, but the low downside scares me a little bit. And Achane doesn't really have any downside.
We never think these receivers are going to be Jalen Reagor, and sometimes they are.
Yep. Or, you know, even like a Zach Charbonnet, right? Like, he was a first rounder that year. And like, we've seen it every year. There's somebody that's supposed to be great. Jackson Smith and Jigba, right? Again, last year, not saying he's a terrible player, but he did not return on that investment. And I think if this is what it costs, I'm willing to pay this for someone like a Devon Achane, especially if I'm contending. Now, if I'm rebuilding, I might look at this and say, hey, I'm going to give up Devon Achane. I'd like to get more than this, but if this is the best you can do, go for it. I would say if you're rebuilding and you've got Devon Achane, now is the time. You don't want to wait till after the draft, because that seventh pick could be good, but you don't know that. But after the draft, if it's good, then that price goes up, because that's right where that tier break is. And I really am trying to acquire sevens and eights where I can, because I do think somebody either gets drafted early or somebody will fall to you because somebody else reaches for somebody. And I mean, you've got too many chances there ahead of you. I think you're in a good spot. So I would gladly give that up for Achane points and in a vacuum and all that. But if I'm rebuilding, I see the allure of taking the picks. That's pretty much where I go on that. Next one here, we've got Trade Addict 6, Devontae Adams for a 25 second and third. My, how the mighty have fallen. Devontae Adams is definitely on the other side of that age cliff. And this is kind of like a get out better than nothing kind of trade. So Herms, I'll go to you first again. Devontae Adams or the 25 second and third.
It is a get out while you still can thing, but it's also kind of something that, you know, Rocky was referencing earlier. I too, last offseason, spent a lot of time just picking up Keenan Allen, just going out for, because there's these guys like them, and Devontae Adams is kind of in this bunch now where it's like, yeah, okay, he's old. It's a little bit weird there. But the good news is Gardner Minshew's not bad, and Devontae Adams is also not bad. If you're in a window where you're going for something, then like, yeah, sure, send those assets away. Do whatever you got to do. You know, but like, I don't know. It's a dub if you're moving him off your roster just to get something halfway decent at this point. Like, trades like this, where there's just a former superstar kind of rotting away a little bit, if you move out of them before you can only get thirds, it's a victory. Everyone involved is very happy with this deal. I think the winner of this is everyone.
I like the way you put that. Rocky, any thoughts on Devontae Adams or a second and third?
I would pretty easily buy Devontae Adams for this. you're still going to get another probably couple of good years out of him. And I guess it's probably not going to happen at this point. There's not been a lot of heat around it, but there was some talk of him moving. If he were to get into a better quarterback situation, this would look even better.
Yeah.
Because there was talk of him maybe getting traded to the Jets with Rodgers throwing to him again. Like I said, there's not been a lot going on with that, so I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah, but you never know. Man. But like you said, I think Minshew is capable of supporting Davante Adams. And I think, again, these guys don't tend to fall off a cliff. Even if he declines some, he's still going to be a very serviceable, probably high-end two or something like that for the next couple of years. That's kind of your floor. So, you're not even giving up a second and third this year. It's next year.
Right.
I'll give that up pretty easy if I think my team's going to contend this year.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at. I think you guys are hitting the nail on the head here. I think Adams isn't that bad of an asset, and I think that I'd probably want him if I need the points. And I think this is a pretty okay price to me. Like, you're not getting points from those picks for at least a year, and even then, who knows what they're going to be. So yeah, give me the player again, you know, and as much as I would say, even in a rebuild, give me the picks. I think you can get more than that for Adams once points start mattering.
That's what I was going to say. You wait to win season and then you move him if you really want to get rid of him that bad.
Yep. And that's kind of where I'm at too. Like, if I'm contending, I definitely want Adams. If I'm rebuilding, this is the price you're sending me. Now hold Adams. I'll just wait. And he can die on my roster at this point, because that's just not enough for me. I mean, I get the point, and I see why some people want to get out before it totally craters. And like you said, Herms, before he goes to thirds, right? But just give me the point. Somebody will want him. I don't think he's – I mean, again, we're not able to predict injuries at all, but I don't think he's going anywhere. I think the Raiders are probably going to have a Minshew O'Connell kind of battle, and maybe he's the number one guy there and just balls out. Who knows? Like, he's still Davante Adams, and I still think that's got upside. So, yeah, I'm fine with that. Next trade here, we've got Trade Addict 7. This one involves a 101. I love 101 trades. When I see them on the timeline, I'm always like, ooh, big boy trade. So this one is the 101 for the 107 and Kirk Cousins. Rocky, you know I'm going to you first on this one, with the old quarterback here in Kirk Cousins and your lukewarm take on Caleb, I guess. But what do you think, 101 or the 107 and Cousins?
I would do this for the 107 and Cousins. I would, as long as, you know, obviously, as long as it's not like I didn't earn the 101, because I don't know that I want Cousins in that case. I don't know how much you can flip them for, even. I mean, it's probably another late first or something. But if I think I can contend this year and that's not my 101, I'll take Cousins and the 107, because as we talked about, that 107, even if I don't right love those two players, it is right on the edge. It's valuable. You could even flip that for another, you know, another player if you want to, that could do pretty well for you. So I think, you know, I love Cousins in Atlanta. So, I mean, I think a lot of people do. And, you know, with Zach Robinson too, Arthur Smith out of there, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson. I mean, what's not to like?
So many options.
Yes. Yeah. So, and I don't think it's out of their own possibility that Kirk Cousins for the rest of their careers outscores Caleb Williams, even given that he's got about 15 years on Caleb. So, you know, we've seen guys that it probably is not going to be the case. Like, Trevor Lawrence even did not, I don't think, I still don't feel as fully lived up to expectations, but he's going to be a quarterback in this league for a very long time. He's certainly fine. So I don't think it's going to be the case, but we've seen 101s bust before. It's possible. But either way, I'll take the other very good, highly valued player/pick and Kirk Cousins and score a bunch of points and either grab someone young or flip that for another asset.
I like the way you think. Herms, you got anything you want to add to that conversation? Any seasonings from the Herms you want to talk about there?
Yeah, sprinkle some Old Bay on this real quick. We can definitely do that. I think, especially because, now, mind you, my answer is a little bit different because these are Trade Addicts leagues. I have now been in a Trade Addicts league for enough time to know that getting a quarterback is a very difficult thing to do, whether that's in the form of the 101 itself or even just acquiring a veteran like a Kirk Cousins. So in my mind, this automatically elevates the conversation to a different level within the context of these leagues. With that in mind, I think about this basically just being like, okay, do you want Caleb Williams, or do you want the insulated value of the known commodity of Kirk Cousins and your little golden ticket right there where the teardrop starts, so that way you get your pick of whatever falls to you? If there, like we were saying earlier, if there is one player that falls outside of that range because somebody else reached for, I don't know, maybe someone in your league just
Worthy or whoever, yeah. Coleman Frankly, who knows? Thomas.
So you never know. You know, that gets you a position of, like, being in the position of, you know, advantageous happenstance, and also Kirk Cousins, which is a pretty cool thing. And in my mind, that's very acceptable. And then also, even if you don't use this 107, let's say you move it on and do something else, kind of like we talk about in the NFL a lot with coaching trees, there are also trade trees. There, you know, just maybe you don't use the asset yourself, but you parlay it into something else. Any sort of thing like that sort of, you are now insulating yourself a little bit at quarterback and then taking that 107 as a potentially fungible asset that you can just throw at anyone else and turn it into basically whatever you want. That, I think, is pretty creative and pretty smart for both people.
I will say, too, by the way, that if you like McCarthy, this could be two quarterbacks that you're getting.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, McCarthy could be the guy at 107, right? Like, that's very possible. Yeah, I agree. I think I do
love me some J.J. McCarthy. I really do.
So do I. And I think he's very talented. But I'll go a different, slightly different direction on this. I think that's a very reasonable price for the 101. I think that the 107 and Cousins and Herms, I love the way you broke that down, but I think a lot of people are looking at the 101 as a trade chip more than a draft chip. And kind of to what your point was, like, you could probably trade that either before, during, or after the NFL draft, or even your own rookie draft, and potentially get something like the 105 and Jordan Love or some crazy thing. You never know. Right, somebody is going to want to move up there and into that.
People are valuing this 101 as highly as some 101s, because I think you have reservations about
that. Again, I think this is where my vibes are different than yours. I'm only in the one Trade Addicts League, right? I'm in a bunch of other leagues where the 101 is the hardest thing to get, which makes no sense to me, right? Like, I had an offer of the 101 for CJ Stroud and another pick, like a third round or second pick or something. I'm just like, no, I value Stroud more than Williams. Like, what are we doing here? Like, I think that this is ultimately where it comes down to. I would rather have the 107 and Kirk Cousins, but I think the community and maybe the fantasy world at large would probably pay more for the 101. And so ultimately, that's where I come down to, what can I get for either of these? And if I've got the 107 and Cousins, I'm probably trading that for the 101 and then immediately trying to shop it and see what I can get for it. Cause I just think you've got, you know, more upside, more potential, even if it's Caleb and everybody knows it. The other angle then is, if I've got the 101 and this is the best offer that's come through for me, I'm not making this trade today. I'm holding on, because again, there's no reason to make this move. So if this is, and again, Trade Addicts are not usually sitting still, but if this is what you feel like makes the most sense, or you're really high in Kirk Cousins, go for it, go get your guy. But I'm very much, I think I'm on the side of the 101. DTC and DLF both have the 101 ranked higher. They both have Caleb Williams ranked higher, yada, 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 right? I still think Caleb has a low floor more than most. I'm just not sold entirely. Like you said it before, Rocky, about the Bears, and just there's so many question marks. They've got two top 10 picks. Are those two rookies going to gel if they're both on the offense? And like, yeah, they've got Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Cole Kmet, and like, they've got a Roshan Johnson, like, they've got DeAndre Swift, right? Like, they've got a great offense, but we've seen that fall a little bit apart. Cousins has a terrific offense, and I think if you're just looking at points, 107 and Cousins is going to outscore 101 for probably the next 2 or 3 years, just on those points alone. So I get both sides, but I'm probably fine moving this for the 101 if that's all it's going to cost. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough.
And again, I don't think either of them are wrong. I think that's a pretty fair price. Next up in Trade Addict 7, yet again, we've got what I would consider to be my favorite trade on the sheet. We talked a little bit about Keenan Allen before. This one is Keenan Allen and the 204 for the 109 and the 207. So let's read that again. You got Keenan Allen and the 204 for the 109 and the 207. So basically Keenan Allen and the 204 for a first and a trade back in the second. So it's like a little bit less than a first for Keenan Allen. Rocky, since I went to you first and last, and I'll go to you first here. Which one do you want, Allen in the 204 or the 109 and 207?
Did you say Rocky. Me? I thought you said Herm.
I thought you said Rocky. I don't know. Okay. Rocky, go ahead.
My bad. I was waiting for Herms to go. That was my fault. This was a weird one. By the way, I think this was Russ, and I think he got the
point. Oh.
But I'd have to look. I know this one was Russ. I can't remember which side he got, but I think it's the picks. I think I lean the picks here, though, because if you try and trade Keenan Allen alone, you're not getting a first. So this is basically 2 seconds for the 109 and 207 in my mind. It's basically how I looked at it. So, yes, I mean, the points have a different value if you're looking that way as a contender. But I think you should be able to get Keenan Allen cheaper than giving up your 109. I know you're getting a slight pick bump up. But, like I said, even if you value Keenan at the 201, which I don't think, like I said, I don't think anyone's really paying first for him at this point. So even if you value him at the 201, it's like the 201 and 204 for the 109 and 207. I'd rather have the 109 and 207.
Yeah, and I just looked this up because I was curious. This is Russ gave up Keenan Allen in the 204 to Casey Kasem for the 109 and the 207. And I remember that's when I saw this. I remember seeing Casey's post on Twitter about it. And I remember she was kind of like, I made a trade and I don't care if you hate it or not. And I was like, I love those trades. And I think this is a terrific trade for both sides, right? The 109 is probably not going to be quite on that range. And Keenan Allen, I think on a new team, has some question marks, but he's still Keenan Allen. And you move up 3 picks in the second, which could make a big difference. So I get both sides of this trade. I think, again, a perfect Russ trade, though, where he's just like, I don't know, sure, why not? Let's just do some content. But Herms, what are your thoughts on this one? Allen in the 204 or 109 and 207?
I mean, the 204 and the 207 are essentially the same thing to me. So it's really it's really just 109 or Keenan Allen. And in that case, like, if I felt a little bit more confident in how things are going to go for Keenan Allen, I'd maybe hesitate a little bit more. But I mean, like, Shane Steichen's a really good offensive coordinator. Like, it's definitely going to be improved in Chicago for sure. But I don't know that extremely reliable sort of short area, like, slot role is necessarily going to be there for Keenan Allen in that system. Like, that's sort of where I get a little bit tripped up. And in that situation, yeah, I would opt for the 109 instead. But, you know, if you believe enough in Keenan Allen, you know, like two of us have referenced trading for Keenan Allen on the show already. Like,
I know, right?
The world loves Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen's awesome. He's fabulous. You know,
Keenan Allen's amazing.
Exactly. Like, I get it. I get it, dude. Like, whatever way you want to go with it, for sure. Like, I agree that, generally speaking, both people win here. But for me and my preferences, I would rather just get that 109 because I'm just a little bit nervous. Right? Yeah, I'm just a little bit nervous about the Bears, so fine.
No, that's entirely fair. And I think it's interesting that Keenan Allen is kind of an interesting asset. Like, we were talking about him before, like a second rounder. You know, I think a second rounder is pretty fair for Keenan Allen. I know during last season I traded what ended up being the 110 for Keenan Allen to make a run for the playoffs. And that was right when I literally made that trade. And then, like, that week was when Burrow went down, and I was like, well, it was a nice run. You know, like, it was a one QB league too. So 110 and a one QB is even worse, right? But the point I'm getting at is, like, I made that trade. I was like, I'm going to go get this. And it was like the next week Burrow's out and I'm scrambling with Jake Browning and other people. And it just didn't come together. But hey, that's what the best thing about trades in season is. In the off season or non-point scoring season, as Daddy Russ says, this is exactly the kind of trade I look for right before the draft, where you might be looking at it like, you know what, that 109, I'm not quite sold on this rookie class. It's really deep. Maybe she's got other picks. And Casey's like, nah, give me Keenan Allen. I just love Keenan Allen. I don't have any shares of him. And he's in a new team. He's finally out from under that Chargers bad luck franchise. Like, maybe this is the turnaround. I totally get it, right? Like I said before, like, this is just, that's a fun trade for me. So with that, we get to our last one, which again is a Herms trade. Right? Trade Addicts 10. So we'll let Herms go last, and Rocky, you and I will discuss. I know you know which side is which, and I don't. I'll leave it alone. But again, Super Flex League, we got a quarterback trade here. Potentially a couple, I guess, depending on how it falls. But Baker Mayfield, the 201 and the 303 for Geno Smith, Marvin Mims, and the 110. You could argue the 110 is the best asset of all of these. I think there is some value in saying the 110 being the best player in the trade. Maybe people look at that and they go, that wins. But Baker Mayfield's no slouch. Geno Smith is a starter. Marvin Mims might have some upside. Like, there's a bunch of questions all over this. So, Rocky, which would you prefer? Baker, 201, 303, or Geno Smith, Marvin Mims, 110?
You could maybe say that 110 is the best asset, but also the 201 is only three picks later. It's just,
yep,
it's almost this, probably the same tier.
Is there a 113 in that league?
Yeah, so it's four picks later.
Not that it matters, just
yeah, major. Four picks later, because there is a 113. So it's really like the 202, but even still, I don't see that as a massive difference. It's going to be a lot of receivers going in that range, I think. And as I said earlier, even when we were talking about the 107, we don't know which ones are going to hit. So the 110 to me is probably almost as good as the 202 is probably almost as good to me as the 110 anyway. And I like Baker Mayfield way more than I like Geno Smith. He's younger. He's going to probably have higher, he's going to have higher volume than Geno. And he just got signed to a new contract.
Yeah, longer leash for sure. Yeah.
And as the Marvin Mims piece isn't inconsequential to me, but he did not have a great rookie year, and he's got horrible quarterbacking this year, most likely. Even if they draft someone, that person's probably not going to be that great their rookie year, because I don't think they're jumping up into any of those top four quarterbacks.
But Rocky, what if I told you they just traded for a quarterback? And it was Zach Wilson. Was that changed? Does that change your mind? Like, no, I'm just
I hate Marvin Mims even more than
that. I know, we talked about that before. Like, Mims and Sutton, you poor guys. Oh my God.
Yeah. So I like the Baker side. I actually sent an offer for Baker that probably wasn't as good as this before Herms ended up making this trade, because I was trying to make some trades for the show today that I didn't get any done. But yeah, I like Baker as a kind of cheaper quarterback that you're going to have for a few, you know, kind of like how I like to go cheaper on guys. He's a guy I don't mind trying to get right now if you can get him for like a very late first or something like that. So yeah. I'll take Baker over Geno. The picks kind of even out to me, and I kind of think Mims is not going to be what some people were hoping he would be when he's drafted anyway. So.
Yeah, and I'm feeling a lot of what you're feeling here. I think Baker is better than Geno. I'm willing to say that and pretty conclusively say that. You know, they're both QB2s, but I feel much more steady with Baker. 201 or even the 202, if we count that way, to the 110. I'm with you. They're in the same tier for me. So I don't mind, you know, moving down within the same tier. And I would rather have the 303 than Mims at this point, sadly. So I feel like, to me, it's like a, you know, plus, neutral, plus. Yeah, I'll take the Baker side. So with that being said, Herms, which side did you get?
The cold streak is over. my trade was positively reviewed on the Trade Addict podcast.
All we had to do is get Russ not to be on. I love it. No, that's awesome. So
it's so funny how this works. Like, I kept like mental track of like any time my trades would pop up, and it's fine. I mean, like, especially because, you know, like, being the manager involved, like, I have my vision in my head about where I want it to go and all that stuff, you know. So it's like, but yeah, this one basically just came down to the same thing you guys said. It was like, okay, most of this is mostly the same, but Baker Mayfield is my age and Geno Smith is not my age.
Yeah, he's
so
older.
why don't I just go ahead and, like, yeah, because I mean, like, I know what it feels like to be 28, 29 years old. I feel pretty spry right now, you know, definitely more spry than I'm going to be whenever I'm Geno Smith's age. So, like, yeah, that was really the big calculus, because I had made a bigger deal in the offseason to address quarterback stuff. I picked up Jalen Hurts in a trade that, you know, was a whole conglomerate of a bunch of other assets. So now it's like, yeah, I mean, I basically just solidified my QB3 spot. So I just have Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, and Baker Mayfield. So it's like, whammo, let's go, party time.
I love it. Yeah. And I know exactly what you mean. I've been roasted a few times for my trades. It's always nice to feel, you know, validated in a sense. But unfortunately, that means whoever you traded with is starting a new cold streak, probably. But that's okay. That's all right. That's how it goes.
Got to be objective on here. And, yep. 99.9% of the time, we don't remember who's involved in the trades unless it's me or Russ anyway.
Well, I was going to mention that since we brought it up a little bit earlier, you know, about you know your league and know your settings and kind of know who you're dealing with. And in my mind, I am more willing to make wild trades in Trade Addicts leagues, partially because it's for the content. And then partially because we're trading all the time anyway. Like, it's just for fun. Like, you know, so there are some leagues that I get in where everybody takes it so serious and like there, nobody wants to lose the trade. And like, everybody's really hesitant to pull the trigger on things. And I feel like in Trade Addicts leagues, it's a little bit looser. Now, granted, it's a little bit sharper. You get a lot more people that are trading a lot more and have a better valuation and might all agree because we all listen to the same podcast, right? But generally speaking, I feel like trades are easier to negotiate in Trade Addicts leagues. And again, broadly speaking, so I don't mind messing up and I don't mind getting roasted for the content. I think there was a trade even last year or the year before where I sent an offer to Russ and he was like, did you forget a part? And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, I did. That makes a whole lot of difference. And he accepted that. And then I remember he mentioned it on the show and I was just cracking up mowing the lawn. I'm just like, yep, that was what I did. Like, I totally forgot a piece. Like, you know, like it's how it goes. And I say that now to Russ all the time. I always come back to him like, did you forget a piece? Because this trade is terrible. But that's just how he rolls. But with that, it's the last question on our show sheet. It's the end of the show sheet, which means it's the end of the show. Rocky, was there anything you wanted to bring up as a new co-host of the show again, as a new old co-host of the Trade Addicts podcast?
I mean, if you want me to, I can just do some of our closing stuff.
That'd be great. You know,
first, let's Herm, just remind everyone where they can find you.
Oh, yeah. You can find me on the Twitter machine at Herm's NFL. You can find my content at the next place that hires me.
There you go. Next place that hires me.com. Yeah.
And I just want to, you know, say all our stuff. Make sure you're following me at Dynasty FF, even though I barely tweet anymore. At Andrew Hall FF. Russ is at Dynasty Outhouse, of course. Follow the pod on Twitter, on YouTube. Well, you can't follow on YouTube, but you can follow the DAP Network on YouTube. If you want to watch us on YouTube, you can also subscribe to the Patreon at patreon.com/TradeAddictsPod and see Herm's beautiful face when he comes on the show and all his great tattoos. So so make sure you sign up for that. You get to watch when we record. We have a Discord with all the people from all the leagues can talk in one chat. And there's like specific league chats for every league. It's a lot of fun in there. And as always, make sure you're supporting, especially this time of year, Fantasy Cares. Scott Fishbowl season is here. And Russ and Scott and Bosch and a whole bunch of people are doing Fantasy Care stuff like every single day, I think. Like, so just make sure you're out there supporting them. But I think that's pretty much it.
I love it. That's right. So with that, we're going to close up shop. Another fine Trade Addicts session. Thank you so much for tuning in. Like he said, subscribe, rate, review, and all that jazz. And we'll see you on the next one. But say bye, Herms.
Oh, goodbye. Yes, adios, everyone.
Bye. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addicts Podcast, a proud member in the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FF Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addicts Podcast. Poopy Pants. That is the best. See ya.